Welcome to issue 213 of Critical Encounters, a podcast about Marvel Champions, a living card game by Fantasy Flight Games. Here we take a good look at that most critical piece of the game, the encounter sets. We'll discuss those poorly understood characters, unfairly labeled villains, and their various plans to shape humanity and benefit the planet, as well as those so-called heroes intent on thwarting them. I'm one of your hosts, Ray, and joining me this episode is Steve. How you going, Steve?
Good day. No, I'm sorry. I had to. Hi. How's it going?
Well, that's another one. How's it going? Going good. And also joining us tonight is Daniel. How you going, Daniel?
Hello, Ray. Welcome to the lair.
Yeah, thank you. I'm very excited to number one, be invited to the lair. And I love what you guys have done with the place.
Thank you. We work really hard, and most people don't acknowledge that.
Well, we make the minions work really hard, but yeah.
Yeah, I've seen a couple of Doom bots that were looking a little unhappy, so just kind of shoveled away.
Yeah. Oh, well, folks might not know who you are, so let's get to know this third voice. This is Ray from Into the Night, the Moon Knight podcast. Folks have heard us talk about you. Mm-hmm. We're so excited to have you on the show. Feels like years since Mike and I were on yours.
Yeah.
It might have been. I don't even know.
It was, well, I gauge it with baby. So that was actually pre-baby as well.
Oh, so, yeah. Okay.
Yes, it does seem like a lifetime ago. But yeah, it had both of yourself and Mike on Internet, the Moon Knight podcast. That was great. We got to talk, of course, Marvel Champions and the lack thereof of Moon Knight. I host Into the Night, the Moon Knight podcast. I also host with the lovely Saren, To Know Her Is to Fear Her, a Spider-Woman podcast. Oh, wow. Spider-Woman is one of my favorites as well, and she is so cool in Marvel Champions too. So I'm very glad that she's doing so well in the game. Also a host of Predator and Prey, a Yautja podcast. So anyone that loves the Predator franchise or Aliens, you can go check it out. I'm hosting that with Russell and Justin, who are two fine gentlemen over yonder your way. So a couple other Americans as well. last Tuesday of every month, I'm on the Capes and Lunatics Network, and I co-host a Scarlet Spider podcast. So with Phil and Dave, we talk Scarlet Spider. Ben Reilly, another little niche character.
And if I'm time to do anything else,
I know. I barely have time, but it is so much fun. And if that wasn't enough, I'd like to announce, I haven't announced it yet on the air, but okay. I have released it. I've released a YouTube channel called Ray Plays Games, and I do solo playthroughs. So I've just released my first video of a Marvel Champions, but I'm hoping to do like all these other games that I really love, like Marvel Legendary, Legendary Encounters, Final Girl, Spirit Island. There's a whole heap of them. So I caught the gaming bug, and you can catch me. Awesome. Yeah. So just catch me on at RayRayPod. R-E-Y pod, and you should be able to get in touch with me. Say hello.
So, Ray, I got a question for you. So all these podcasts that really focus on a kind of a very specific individual.
Yeah.
Like, Steve, you and I struggle to find anything useful to say about the entire Marvel universe. How do you – you've got like hundreds of Moon Knight episodes, right?
Yeah, we're closing in on our 350th
episode. How is there that much to say? How do you like find the stuff? Like what has been the challenges for you to like keep a thing like that going, such a minutely specific thing? Because I'm just fascinated by this.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm baffled myself at times. But look, Moon Knight features in around about, I think, 350 issues.
Okay.
Plus cameo, that includes cameos as well. So we go through any comic that has Moon Knight in it, even as significant or insignificant an appearance that he does make. There have been a couple of episodes where we do one and he's in one panel. And that actually gives us a little, yeah, it gives us a little bit of flex to kind of bend the rules a bit. But, you know, with the TV show that came out as well, that generated a lot of interest and took a lot of our time as well. So we had fun covering that. We actually even branch out to writers or creators or artists that have been involved in the past with Moon Knight. So again, we kind of flex the rules when it comes to that. So yeah, it's lasted this long and
that's awesome.
Yeah, happy to go on.
Do you get into the Egyptian mythos at all or anything like that as well?
Oh, yes. I love mythology. Similar to yourself, Daniel. Yes, yes. Not as learned as you are with it, but I do love all sorts of mythology as well. So one of my favorites is the Monkey King, Journey to the West, just because he's such a cool character. Egyptian mythology for sure. And since the TV show and more recently the comics have re-explored that part of Moon Knight, we've done the same as well.
That's great.
Yeah,
fantastic.
Yeah,
yeah. And so, what we'll do is we'll put a bunch of links down in the show notes or link them to our socials so folks can find, you know, one of those characters if they like. So
with all Ray's shows, these will be the longest show notes of our career, Steve.
Yeah, no, right? It'll be nice.
I love it.
I did start watching your Ray Plays Games. I didn't get enough time to. You're playing with real cards, physical cards, so that's always fun to watch.
Always a plus. Yeah.
Yep.
Just really taken in by how much I enjoyed watching card game playthroughs. Your playthroughs are awesome as well. And I have dabbled in the Octagon, and I think I've released a couple of bonus episodes in my shows using Octagon, but playing the game, I just love using the cards, and so I wanted to see if I could do the same, get an overhead camera and stuff like that. And yeah, it's fun. It's fun to show it. It's good.
Yeah, it's a lot more work than people might think too, because I've done with the camera ones, solo. Yes. Basically, that's all you're going to be able to do. Mm-hmm. But the setup and the getting the lighting and the sound or something's in the way or I don't know, something else happens. It's and then you got to get it onto the computer and it can be tricky. So
fellas, I thought the whole point of these LCGs was to spend hundreds and hundreds of dollars on cards that you keep in your closet and then play on TTS or Octagon.
Well, that is that is a way to handle it. Yeah, true. But. No, I love the feel of the cards, the board in front of me, or whatever the mat. It is fun.
Yeah.
Me too. Wish I had more opportunities for it, but.
Well, Daniel, let's learn more about Ray. So, Ray, how did you get into the game? What is your history with the Marvel Champions? Obviously, your history with Marvel is pretty significant. That seems obvious. Mm-hmm. But how about with the game? I believe you're somewhat of a recent convert here. So
yeah. Wow. Very new, but I fell hard, really hard into the game. So it was March last year, so at the time of this recording, March 2023. So it was just under a year ago. I had always wanted to pick it up, and I'd always put it off. And then I found this private sale. This guy was selling a whole bundle, with a whole lot of hero packs, and I thought, oh, okay, this is a good start, and I'm a completionist, so I'll be off to a good start. He had the first 10, 12 hero packs plus a couple of the expansions and the core set. So I picked all that up after I blew my wallet. And I just fell in love with it. I just kept on playing it. The rules, I guess, didn't faze me. I mean, just like anyone, just made heaps of mistakes, but it was so fun and kept on losing, particularly to Claw first off. I remember just a run of just losses, and there was a point I was just going, oh God, what's the point? What is the point? But just kept on at it because it was just so much fun it's a game where, it's obvious, but it's a game where you can be the superhero. It feels like you're using their power. It feels like you're changing to alter ego. So yeah, I just fell in love with that. And it's kind of like a gateway to games in general. I've never been someone who's been into games, but Champions has opened the door to the likes of Arkham Horror to me, A lot of solo play games because, my other friends aren't really into games. I just, it's kind of like a personal pursuit. That's pretty much how I got into, Marvel Champions.
Sweet.
And now you have everything? You're all caught up?
I'm totally up to date. It is top one priority with all the games. So whenever a hero pack comes out, whenever a campaign comes out, I'm getting the games and I'm getting the sleeves and I'm going to kind of, archive it or whatever. That's good. Yeah.
Well, speaking of this game and speaking of the villains in this game, Ray, who's your favorite one that we got?
Yeah,
and then who do you want to see that we don't have?
Oh, okay. Oh, lovely. My favorite villain, just because this is a mixture of, liking the villain in comic books as well as liking to play against them in Champions. The first one I have to just come up with is Juggernaut. I really love Juggernaut. Juggy. He's pretty cool. He is, truth be told, he's quite manageable when you do play him. But I love the idea, his mechanic of the momentum counters. I love how you have to rip off his helmet, which is very much a thing from the comics. That's kind of like one of his only weaknesses. So I think they've, like many of the characters, heroes and villains, Marvel Champions designers have, hit the nail on the head with theme, with Juggernaut. So I just love him.
Awesome. Awesome.
As for a villain that we haven't seen yet, I will, it's a little bit of a, okay. The first thing I'll go to, and it's, I'm going to go to a Moon Knight one then. I'll go for, I'll go for Bushman. I reckon Bushman, he's largely seen as the arch nemesis of Moon Knight. He's not that spectacular, he hasn't got any powers or anything like that. So it would be interesting to see how he would be designed for the game.
I see. Yeah. So what world of Marvel do we need to have as a wave that would put Moon Knight in it?
Oh, definitely street hero, street level heroes, or the Midnight Suns. I know a lot of people in forums have been talking about, let's get a Midnight Suns campaign with, say, Moon Knight, Ghost Rider. You can have Blade. Who else? Just all those kind of street level. Oh, Daredevil as well, of course.
Jones, Luke Cage, those cats.
Yeah, get them in. As heroes, Iron Fist. I mean, would love to see something like that. I don't want to say defenders because Moon Knight wasn't a defender, but I'll just say Midnight Suns. that would be good, and that would be logical, I think. And everyone's talking about Fantastic Four, which I would love to see come in as well. But I wouldn't mind some street levels. Daredevil has been absent for so long.
I bet you that FFG waits on Daredevil till the very end just to string us along, just because everybody, they're going to be like,
yeah. That'll be how we know the game is dead. The
game is dead. Once Daredevil hits, we're like, oh, that's it. It's over with, because they've got no more carrot on the end of the stick for us. So, yeah.
Oh, I'd love to see him before that, but yeah.
Me too. Sure.
That would be maybe crazy. I forgot to also mention as well, I wanted to get in there. I know it was a little bit of a, when you asked about the villain that hasn't been featured yet, Madame Hydra, I think she is in the game, but I'd love to see her as a villain.
She's in my top three. Yep.
Yeah, she's awesome. So she could be so lethal. So yeah, she's another one I'd love to see.
Nice. Okay, so how about those heroes that we like to see lose? You like to see them get beat up. You want to see them put in their place.
Yeah.
In or outside the game.
Yeah. I struggled a little bit with this question when you first asked me, just before we came onto this show, but then it immediately clicked with me, and it's a bit of a cheat answer. Deadpool, I love him, but I just love having the tar beaten out of him as well. Daredevil, definitely. I'd love to see beaten constantly.
Can he actually lose?
I have lost with him, actually. Well, you know what? It's really interesting because these innocuous cards previously in villain sets, which really didn't do much to you, have now become really lethal with Deadpool. I played Deadpool against Ultron, and I drew Concussive Blast, and that's deal one damage to your character, and I was in Alter Ego. Oh. And that's it. That's it. Like, it's like, oh, bugger. Like, you know. So that was...
You're in hero form. You took a big hit and died. Yes, I
died and I flipped over. And then, yeah. And then the encounter card was Concussive Blast. I couldn't do anything. And similar with... I played Deadpool up against Hela. And I think it's the... I can't remember. It's the Frosty Winds of Niflheim or something. And that's, again, take one indirect damage. And I was in Alter Ego. So a lot of these cards, which initially were like a bit meh, like it's like, okay, I'll take one hit, whatever. That can be lethal for Deadpool. So
I like how he's really super strong, but can get essentially poked to death.
Yeah, exactly.
That's great.
So the Deadpool would be, just beat up on him, please.
Love it.
It's a good one. It's a good one.
It's a good one.
Yeah. So, you know, Daniel, with that in mind and with nice, you know, imagery of Deadpool being beaten to a bloody pulp.
It is a beautiful image.
What is on your mind tonight?
Oh, well, thanks, Ray. We asked you a bunch of questions. It's only fair you would ask me one. I think on my mind tonight are a few things. One is the kindness of our community. One is about film, and the other is about how I apparently lack any critical eye for the film medium of storytelling. So
interesting.
Last week I put into the Discord, our channel chat. I said, hey, I've never seen an X-Men movie. What's the order I should watch them in? Cause some people it's like go chronological, just release date or whatever. Seemed like release date was the most common answer. So I've actually seen 4.5 of them. So I've done X1, 2, 3, Wolverine Origin, and then I'm halfway through First Class.
Okay.
And I know that a whole lot of people criticize some of these movies for certain, but like, I just love movies and stories. I mean, it's like, like the new Star Wars you want, like the sequels to the original, you know, I'm talking about the ones with Oscar Isaac and stuff like that.
79. Those
got, 79. Those got panned. And I'm like, I loved every moment of every one of them. And I'm like, I just, you know, I'd like to see these characters again. I'd like to know some backstory. I love movies. And so I don't really understand kind of like, especially when you love a thing, and maybe that's where the criticism really comes from. It's because you love something so much, you want it to be a particular way in your mind or your heart or whatever. Like, I don't really come to these things with that. Not even Lord of the Rings or Star Wars. So, like, I really enjoyed the dumb Amazon thing that you hated. Just like, hey, just give me some elves and tell me a story. Right?
Okay.
And so, but, like, I know that super fans are oddly more critical of the things they love than casual. And I know my job on this podcast is to sort of be the everyman, but I have watched all 4.5 of these movies and enjoyed almost every minute of it. There are some weird things, but I also don't know like where there's discontinuity or there's like that character never did that. Or, you know, like it's just sort of these worlds that I'm being introduced to that I'm enjoying. And so I just want to thank the community for like, hey, just tell me the movies to watch in what order. That's great. But I want to talk a little bit, throw it out there to you guys who are lovers of a thing. And so you have a critical eye that is different from mine. And so like these first 4.5 movies I thought were great. I really like Fassbender as young Magneto. I like, we're talking about Mystique today and she's been in every one of these. And now I'm on the one where she's sort of a good guy because it's like First Class.
Yeah.
It's Jennifer Lawrence, and like I'm like, okay, like I'm just learning stuff. Loved Wolverine and all that stuff. What do you guys think of these movies? And are they? And I know our game doesn't care about the movies so much, but you know, like, okay. How do you?
You said a couple of things. One, I know that, what is it, Last Stand? I think that's X3 gets...
X-ray, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, people don't like it as much, and I was one of the ones who said it's not as bad as people think. It's a fine movie, you know. With I think you also said with the knowledge of the legendarium of it, something that doesn't follow that, like in general, but we'll talk about the X movies. Mm-hmm. You know, if you know the X-Men comics and you love it and you're into this story and then this and you know all these sort of things, and then mm-hmm. the movies diverge or ignore or do the opposite of course you're not going to have as great of appreciation for the movie because you have this great appreciation for the original content.
But can't you see where the change in story like feeds that genre better than maybe the original? Like, you know, it's like changes that Lord of the Rings, the movies made to the books. They almost universally made sense to me. Like why you would do that in the film. Yeah. Versus
some changes are just going to happen because it's a different medium, right? It's an inevitable change. And then some changes I think take away from maybe what
give me,
who the
give
character
me one.
Might
give me
be
one from the first couple movies if you got one in mind.
So for the X-Men movies, I don't. What, Ray, do you have one for the X-Men movies?
Yeah, I mean, I do. And it's a great point, Daniel and Steve. You raised some good points as well. It's such a fine line between being reverential towards the comic book, I guess, canon, and then veering away where you need to. So an example for me would be Phoenix in at the end of X2, and then, you know, X3, The Last Stand with the Dark Phoenix. That's not how it happens in the comics at all, but I remember being in the cinemas and watching X2 and at the end seeing Phoenix and going, yes, we're going to get Phoenix, you know? So it was very exciting to get the essence of it and to see it play out. And yeah, didn't mind too much that it veered away from the comic books. Funnily enough, the subject of this episode, Mystique, she veers a lot away from the comic books, and I feel it's as if it's like, okay, we've got Jennifer Lawrence, she's a big actor, let's create a bigger role for Mystique, and she's, you know, she's not a Z-list character, but she's nowhere near as prominent in the comics as she is in the films, and I don't know, for me that was a little bit annoying because it was more like, you know, why don't we focus on some of the originals like Beast. I mean, he was featured a little bit, but you know, Iceman, Angel got hard done by, I think, in the X movies. So yeah, there's stuff like that. And Daniel, you're gonna enjoy later on all the other movies. They really derail it. So
I think the interesting thing between the Marvel movies is Marvel has created a precedent that there are multiple universes, right? There's a 616 and there's a 212 and the whatever, you name a number, 90210. So the movies are just a different universe, right? It's in a different part of the multiverse. So anything goes, and that makes it easy.
But you they're trying to bring them all back together, right? That's what the Deadpool
trying to bring them into
about.
They're going to bring them into the MCU, but that's its own universe. That's still not like following the comics, the main, right, the 616, even though they hinted that it was. I don't know. Marvel sets the stage where there are multiple universes. The what if, I mean, they have a what if series, right? Here's what if this thing happened. So that never bothered me too much. As long as you get kind of the essence of the characters. I want to see Iceman freezing things and riding an ice slide and doing things like he did in my childhood from the cartoons, right? Yeah. When you go into a different a different IP like Lord of the Rings, for me, there is one set. There is no multiverse. So if you diverge too far from that, now you're taking away from the source material, and there is no precedent for that from the original creators of the source material. That's where I start to, like, where I get critical.
Sure.
Yeah. That's fair enough. And look, and I totally have that as headcanon as well, Steve, like that. It's an implied headcanon, I think, for most people that the MCU is another universe to the 616. The only thing that really kind of ticked me off a little was in Ms. Marvel, the TV show, where they actually implicitly state that their universe is 616.
Right. Yeah, and that's it's like, they ruined it.
No,
they ruined it.
I know. Right. They should have said 617 or something. I go, okay, that's fair. Yep. But she said 616, and it's like, no.
Yeah, she should have said 607, because that's my area code for our phones here. I would have been like, yeah, 607. But yeah, no, so I thought, 20 years of great, multiversal stuff ruined by one line. It's like, oh, why did you guys do that? Yeah.
I know. So, it's terrible.
Yeah. But... yeah, I mean, you have to be able to appreciate it for what it is, take it as its own story, Daniel, right? But it's like, I don't know, you do, right? Take Beowulf or one of these great classics from your other podcast and then just totally rewrite it or completely change a character who is supposed to always be honorable and forgiving and then turn them into the villain, right? Or that doesn't work. Or, they resist the temptation of the ring on purpose, in the stories, but in a series they're going to give into it. So like that's where people I think start to get critical. It's like you ruin a character, quote unquote, ruin this character by changing it dramatically.
Sure, sure.
So,
And particularly if it's an arbitrary like change.
That's for no reason.
I've got in my head just that one of the later shows on Disney Plus, Echo. And they've completely changed her power set and stuff. And it's like,
I haven't watched it yet.
I haven't watched it either. But
there's another thing. I enjoyed every moment of that.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I haven't got to it.
Yeah.
But, like that too is like a cultural milieu that I'm fascinated by. And so I was excited to see that representation in the shows.
No, absolutely. Yeah.
But, I'll watch every movie or every show. And then I watch Eric Voss on New Rockstars tell me what I just saw. and he's got interesting criticisms of things too. Like he brought up the Phoenix thing, like, the origin of Dark Phoenix is cosmic, right?
Yeah.
And in the show, it has something to do with like a split personality or something that's actually an issue with her personally. And like, that's a bummer. And then like the critique of Echo is that it's really a Kingpin show. When it shouldn't have been, right? And so, but I really liked that show and that character, and I really liked the secondary characters around her. I thought they were fascinating. So, yeah. I don't know. I just love stories and people telling me stories, especially with pictures.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
You know what we should do, Daniel, tonight is we should get Ray to tell us another story. What do you think?
I love stories. Is he going to use pictures?
He is. Yeah. Awesome. I mean, we'll look at pictures at towards the end, but yeah.
Yeah, right. Mine pictures.
We'll put the pictures on the cards that we'll look at.
No, so. They're smart.
True. That's true. Yeah. That's true.
Yeah.
But yeah, do you want to learn more about Mystique in the comics?
Yeah, we do, because you are going to talk to us about Mystique, Rogue's nemesis. So Daniel did talk to us a little bit about Mystique, like last volume. I don't even know when that was. So I'm excited to hear your take. Tell us all about it, and let's do it. Go for it.
Okay. Well, my gosh, there is so much to talk about Mystique, but I'm going to obviously try and focus on her relationship with Rogue and, why she's a nemesis of Rogue. And before getting into a lot of the details, I think essentially what we're looking at is like a stepmother who is severely, severely traumatized in Mystique. Wanting to have love, like to be loved by Rogue, and vice versa as well, because Rogue has a little bit of a broken family too, due to her powers. So she ended up running away from home, and that's where kind of Mystique picks her up. But first and foremost, and I know Daniel, you probably covered a lot of Mystique's stuff. I just wanted to set out. She's obviously a shapeshifter or a metamorph, as they call them in the comics, her particular power set. She can shift her cells and molecules to a point where she can actually slow down her aging. So I guess it's manipulating your cells, comics, just let's leave it at that. So she can slow down her aging, and she is recorded to be well over 100 years old. That also means that she has been obviously, past century, she's been alive and well and kicking. And it was around that time that she met one of a very important figure in her life, Irene Adler, who, correct me if I'm wrong, that's the same name, isn't it, from Sherlock Holmes?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Yep. Okay, because yep. I had to double take, thinking, hang on.
But it is. I was talking about Mystique, she was Sherlock Holmes for a bit.
Irene Adler, who's Destiny, she's a precog. She can see the future, and she wants to help change the world, help stop bad events, stuff like that. And Mystique wanted to do that as well, help her out, because they became lovers. One of the things was Irene or Destiny had foreseen that this figure, Rogue, was a very important figure. So that is what kind of instigated Mystique to seek her out. And so she found Rogue. Rogue had run away from home, as I mentioned. She had an incident with her absorbing powers and I think knocked out her boyfriend. Obviously the fear and everything that comes with being a mutant. So she ran away. Mystique picked her up. And she became her adoptive mother, and between her and Destiny, they took care of Rogue for about a decade, as Rogue grew up, from a young teen to a young adult. And she recruited her into the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants. Now, this is the third iteration of the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants. The first one, obviously, created by Magneto, but Mystique created one herself, because I guess she started getting a little bit of a skewed perspective about how to help the world. So she started to turn a little bit villainy. So she created the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants, had the likes of Blob, from the games, Avalanche and Pyro and Destiny as well, and Rogue. So they were the Brotherhood, and they tussled with the likes of the Avengers. And one of the big moments there was that Rogue touched Carol Danvers, Captain Marvel. I think touched her a little bit too long or something, or Captain Marvel's genealogy was different because she's kind of half Kree, I don't know. But something went really bad. Rogue ended up absorbing a lot of Carol's life force, and so she permanently inherited Captain Marvel's superhuman strength, durability, and her flight powers. But she also took on board all the memories and emotions and psyche that, that was part of Carol Danvers. And she left Captain Marvel a shell, basically a husk. But Rogue was really struggling as well. She was literally being driven insane with all these kind of basically having a second psyche in her head. The only way to stop that, Professor X, that really dastardly bugger, he took Rogue in and said, look, I can help you. I can restore Carol Danvers, and I can help you with your predicament. Mystique, meanwhile, was quite angry at this. I said, look, you're trying to take my daughter away from me. Rogue said, no, look, Mum, I need to stay here for a while. I need to be cured by Professor X. So Mystique grudgingly accepted that and let Rogue be under the wing of Professor X and the X-Men, which was a bad move because we all know that, Rogue ended up becoming good, which is terrible, right?
She joined those X-Men.
So Mystique, went her way, carried on with the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants, tried to assassinate Senator Kelly that we've seen in the game as well. And again, they ended up going head-to-head against the X-Men. And so since Rogue was kind of residing with them, it was around this point that she kind of lent to the light side. So she was technically still a Brotherhood of Evil Mutant, but when they clashed with the X-Men, she kind of started siding with the X-Men, which again would have kind of ticked Mystique off and kind of disrupted their relationship. Fast forward ahead, there's a whole slew of events that I won't get into it because it would last, five episodes. Well, but
can I ask you a question real quick, Ray?
Yeah, sure.
None of this Mystique Rogue stuff is explored in the movies, right?
No, none at all. No. Okay. They're completely separate, I think. Incidentally, I'll also say as well, which it is funny, you do have slight interactions in the movies. So just casting your mind back again, when she met Destiny, back in the old centuries, she also came across the likes of Sabretooth and Wolverine. She had an affair with Sabretooth. And she also had an affair with another mutant who was immortal called Azazel. And I think he was in X3, if I'm not mistaken.
No, he's in First Class. Oh. I'm watching him right now.
Oh, okay. He's in First Class. But he's an immortal mutant. And
he's a bad dude.
He's a bad dude. And he and Mystique sired Nightcrawler. So Nightcrawler is actually the son of Mystique through that. But tracking back to Rogue now joining the X-Men, a whole lot of stuff has happened. Like Mystique, she has had a lot of children, and some of them have turned against mutant kind as well. So that's caused, you know, a lot of heartache for Mystique. Destiny has died. She died in a sequence that involved Legion, which is the son of Professor X. So there's a lot of resentment, more resentment of Mystique towards Professor X now as well.
I think one of our previous episodes, I tried to explain how like so-and-so came back in time and did this guy and that guy did, and it was Mystique, but it wasn't, and it was this. Yeah, it's like, whoa, that was pretty bananas. Yeah.
It's crazy bananas. And, you know, welcome to the X-Men stories when, you know, with all that sort of time travel,
yeah.
Paradoxes and stuff like that, which is Mystique is right at the heart of it. So anyway, but she, I guess what I'm saying is during these events, she suffered a lot of trauma and she started building resentment towards the X-Men as well. What happens next, I mean, down the line, there's a sequence where all the mutants lose their powers. And there is one incident where Rogue and Mystique meet up again. And the relationship is further kind of dirtied when Rogue mentions, oh, look, we're going to go over to the High Evolutionary, who he's the guy that actually stripped all these powers off, and we're going to fight him to try to get the powers back. Now, I think, I haven't read the comics, but I think it's a pride thing, maybe Mystique saying, you know, being a bit too proud that her daughter's doing the work, because Mystique didn't have powers then. So I'm assuming she would want her powers back. But she didn't take kindly to Rogue saying that they will fight the High Evolutionary to get the powers. So I'm assuming that's more of a pride thing. Track forward, and there was another sequence of events, including the Legacy Virus. And what had happened, it was Mystique was infiltrating a facility headed by Moira McTaggart. She was researching the Legacy Virus, which was a virus that was attacking mutants. Mystique wanted to sabotage that and somehow change that virus to attack humans and not mutants as well, because Mystique, you know, is a little bit villainy at this stage, so she wants to cause a lot of trouble. Anyway, she blows up Moira McTaggart's facility. She wounds Moira. She shoots Moira's daughter, Wolfsbane, neutralizing her mutant powers. She's got like wolf-like powers. And it is around this time that she confronts Rogue again. So she has her powers. Rogue obviously has her powers back as well. Rogue recently, I don't know how, but she recently touched Wolverine. So I'll just leave it there. And Rogue is kind of imploring to Mystique to stop what she's doing. And Mystique says, okay, I need help. I'm a little bit fragile. I think I'm going crazy. They hug it out, and then Mystique stabs Rogue in the back, you know, like any good adoptive mother. Rogue, thankfully, because I mentioned she touched Wolverine earlier, she has Wolverine's healing factor, so luckily she survives that. But as Mystique then turns towards the rest of the X-Men to fight them, Rogue extrudes some bone claws, again, because she's got Wolverine's power, and she stabs Mystique back, and she hospitalizes her. Mystique goes to jail. So again, a bit of a rift between the relationship. But what I found interesting is that throughout all this, there are instances where Mystique is still trying to help Rogue. So that's why I said at the outset that I think that there is this kind of really complicated mother-daughter relationship. Although she did stab her, that sort of stuff.
I've known a mother-daughter relationship that isn't complicated, and then you add in all these superpowers and things, right? I mean,
it is absolutely crazy. So look, then again, a whole heap of stuff happens, but again, zeroing in on Rogue and Mystique, There's this really convoluted assassination attempt on Professor X, which Mystique takes on board, and she wants to kind of be a double agent and not do it. She gets contracted by this character called the Quiet Man. She tries to not kill Professor X, but the X-Men think that she was trying to kill her. So Rogue actually confronts Mystique at this stage, and it is here, which is one of the milestone moments. Rogue literally says, look, I disown you as a mother. You know, just get out of my life. I don't want anything to do with you. So I'm assuming that really does hurt Mystique. And so she escapes again when the X-Men were trying to, obviously, just capture her and bring her to the authorities. Further down the line as well, not only is Mystique trying to kill people, but she's also trying to disrupt Rogue's relationship. So there have been instances, well, it is well known in the comic book arena, Rogue and Gambit, huge power couple. They love each other. Readers loved when they were together. Mystique tried to disrupt that. And there was an instance as well where Mystique, in a very icky moment, went up to Gambit and said, look, it's not cheating if I turn myself into Rogue. You know, and she basically wanted to coerce Gambit into bed with her just to play with Gambit's mind and Rogue. Tracking forward again, another confrontation, there's a Marauder attack. This is just before Messiah Complex, and Mystique does shoot Rogue, and Rogue is hospitalized, so, you know, no love lost kind of there as well. Rogue recovers, you know, things are all tickety-boo, and then there's a big event called the Messiah Complex.
I don't know what tickety-boo means, but I love it, so keep going.
Okay. Everything's okay. That's basically
tickety-boo.
Tickety-boo.
Okay. That's a cultural thing we don't have here in New York. Tickety-boo. I love it. Okay.
Tracking forward to the Messiah Complex, and this is, again, highlighting the weird relationship. Rogue has contracted a virus called the strain 88, and so she's kind of comatose. Mystique confronts Mr. Sinister, who says, you know, you just get the baby. The long story short, Hope Summers is the baby, right? She's the Messiah. Mm-hmm. So anyway, Mystique decides to try and steal the baby, Hope, in order to cure Rogue. So this is an example of her trying to help Rogue, you know, not doing it in the proper way, but she really wants to help Rogue, despite the fact that she shot her previously and she stabbed her. So, and Rogue, it doesn't work, but Rogue does wake up, and through the X-Men, you know, she gets cured and all that. She confronts Mystique as well, and again, she wants no bar of Mystique. So, there are a few other events, I guess, down the line, culminating in, you know, Utopia, I think, or the Krakoa, I'm sorry, not Utopia, Krakoa events, which are the more recent events in the comic books. But that's kind of a flavor of the confrontations Mystique and Rogue have had. And I guess it shows then why Mystique would be the arch nemesis for Rogue. It's a little bit complicated, a bit of love and a little bit of hate.
But it definitely makes sense that she's the nemesis. Sounds like, for sure.
Yeah, there's a lot of interactions, a lot of complex interactions. Interesting. Yeah. That was great. Thank you.
Thanks, Ray.
Yeah, no worries. Yeah, I've got a lot of sympathy for Mystique, only because of what she's kind of been through. And anyone interested, just read up on it or read the comics. She's gone through a lot. She's been betrayed by her children. You know, and she hasn't had that love from her children. So I really do believe there is this yearning that she wants to be loved by Rogue. But she has, I'll put it out there as well, she has been driven insane a couple of times too. So that does put a spanner in the works.
Awesome.
Cool.
I don't think we would have filtered through all of that as well as you had. So thank you.
Thank you very much. Yeah.
No worries.
There's a lot to her. That's for sure.
Mm.
Well, Steve, maybe we should see how the game captures this relationship.
Oh, you want to look at the pictures now?
I think we should look at the pictures. That was a lot of story without pictures.
It was. All right, so we are going into the Mutant Genesis Wave Rogues Pack, 5 total cards, 3 by title, plus the obligation. This is our final Mutant Genesis Nemesis set that we're looking at. Yep, we are almost done with the Mutant Genesis.
Genesis Nemesis is fun to say.
Oh, yes, it is. So right now we're going to look at the Obligation and Where's Mike? Mike? He's not here. Daniel, why don't you stand in for Mike?
This is Deadly Touch. Now, I have played Rogue in a campaign and loved it. Loved playing her. This came up a couple times. This is an obligation to give to the Anna Marie player. If Touch is attached to a friendly character, deal 2 damage to that character, discard this card. If Touch is not attached to a friendly character, place 2 threat on the main scheme, discard this card. 2 boost icons. Notice, no remove from the game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No choice either, really. Yeah.
And no choice. It's just a thing that's going to happen.
That's good. I like it because it is something that can happen again. Yeah, Rogue can slip up again, you know, with her Deadly Touch. So,
yeah. I've had it where I'm playing and I have touched attached a Gambit in a solo game because I need it on to be attached to a hero so I can do superpower adaptation to get hero cards back, and then it kills Gambit. Like, are you kidding? Just ruined my whole thing, right? And you gotta wait for Gambit to come back out. And yeah, so it can be pretty bad.
Killed a couple allies with this. Yep.
Yeah. Or you might have it attached to, in a multiplayer game, it could be attached to your buddy across the table and you just hurt him. Like, oh. Sorry, Daniel.
I've heard Wolverine as well.
Yep.
I just think, yeah, I haven't had too much interaction with this card as well, but I can see how quite thematic it is as well. And I love the fact that, yeah, I mean, like Rogue, she can hurt her friends. So it works really well.
Yeah. All right. Ray, why don't you read the Woman of the Hour here?
All right, so we have Mystique, who is the arch nemesis. She has 1 scheme, 1 attack, 6 health. Her traits are the Brotherhood of Mutants, and she's elite, so you can't really control her if you've got psionic character. She comes with toughness and villainous, and her forced response is, after Mystique engages you, search the encounter deck discard pile and set aside area for a copy of the Misled Treachery, and shuffle it into your deck. Is that misled or missled? So yeah, this is Mystique's pretty handy. You know, when I saw this, the first thing I thought of was her modular set. I liked how her base stats in the modular set were kind of fluid, you know, to kind of showcase her shape shifting. Would have been cool, I thought, maybe to add that here.
Well, maybe the fluidity comes from villainous.
Yeah.
I think
that's the case. Yep.
Yeah.
She also has 3 boost icons, which most nemesis have. So that's, you know, solid there. 6 hit points and tough, which means she's going to probably get a chance to use that villainous, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah. Unless you have piercing or whatever. But yeah, absolutely. Yep. Villainous is always annoying, but I guess that's the whole point, right?
I do like that you're gonna get missiled no matter what.
Right. She's gonna come out, gonna happen. So
And we see later on as well. Yeah, I mean the side scheme does the same kind of.
Well, Steve, what is this misled card?
What is this misled? Yeah, if it was missiled, then I'm the one who typed it. Yeah, so she comes out, she puts a misled into your deck. I like that she gets it from anywhere, right? So if she comes out not from Shadow of the Past or whatnot, mm-hmm. and you haven't gotten these shuffled in yet, you're going to.
Yeah.
All right. So misled, there are 3 misled treacheries, and it has the shapeshifter trait. When revealed, shuffle this card into your deck. This card gains surge. Okay. Force response. After this card enters your hand, place 2 threat on the main scheme. You may discard this card from your hand at the end of the player phase like any other card. That's just a little reminder. And it's 1 boost icon.
Mm-hmm.
So it takes a tiny bit of parsing, right? It goes into the encounter deck normally, like from a Shadow of the Past.
Mm-hmm.
And then it'll get revealed and shuffled into your deck. and then it surges. Or if Mystique comes out, you shuffle one of these into your deck automatically.
Yep.
And then eventually you're going to draw it, and you're going to put two threat on the main scheme, but you're also going to be down one card. You didn't get to draw a player card. You got this card instead.
Yeah. 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 It's weird, because when I first saw this, two threat, and I'm assuming, I don't play that much multi, but I'm assuming in multiplayer, that's not much at all.
Yeah.
But the other pitfalls of a lesser hand and Surge as well. I mean, Surge is always kind of scary and exciting, because you just don't know what you're going to get. If you haven't drawn your bad cards, your really bad cards yet, you could be hit big. But yeah.
Well, a couple things. So you're right. Like, two threat doesn't seem like a lot, but it changes maybe how you approach your turns, knowing that it's in there. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, sometimes you feel like you can kind of play a little loosey-goosey with the threat level on the main scheme. It's like, oh, I'll probably be okay here. I got four away. Hopefully it won't be in advance. Or, you know, you sort of math it out. This changes the math a little bit. Mm-hmm. And so I like that. And when you discard it, it just goes back into the encounter deck, and it's just more and more of them over and over.
Yeah, so, and since it surges out of the encounter deck, it could do anything.
You could get another one.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, just the fact that it surges means it takes up no space. It's not impacting the encounter deck, really, you're going to get something else that could be more devastating, a minion or a side scheme or whatever. And then this just goes into your deck, and now you also have this little thing that you have to deal with. And now the rules of this, you know, we talked about this a little bit with Mysterio. You don't have to change it's okay that the back of the card is different than the player card back. They don't expect players to sleeve their cards, right? It's not a requirement in the game. I know a lot of people do. And some people will re-sleeve this and put it, you know, so that they don't know it's coming. But sometimes it's the dread of seeing it coming is pretty good. I tend to close my eyes. And if I have to shuffle and I know there's another card in there, I will close my eyes and then stop, so that I don't consciously change the way I shuffle depending on the back of a card.
And also, I mean, because I don't change the sleeves or whatever. I just let it be, because I'm pretty lazy. But it does. I mean, if you do get a glimpse of it, I mean, you could then indirectly plan for it too, which is
sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's changing what you were going to do, maybe.
True. Right. Yeah. True. Yeah. Really.
Yeah. Eventually, it's going to hit. There's nothing you can do about it, right? Unless you're going to be drawing five cards at the end of your turn anyways. So eventually it comes up and you're going to get it. So, and there's three of them. So
three of them, they're coming. If Shadow of the Past happens, they're coming. Or a couple other ways now that we have in the game to get these nemeses in there. Is Shapeshifter trait important? There are other ones out there, aren't there?
Yeah, I think it's...
Yeah, okay. So the other Mystique modular set...
has that, right?
Yes, the Metamorphic Mayhem, the side scheme, says, like, the player who defeated the scheme shuffles each Shapeshifter card from the discard pile into their deck.
Ooh.
So if you were playing with Mystique modular and then you got this one, they do interact. So.
Yeah, that's great.
That's awesome.
That is very good, actually. Yeah. Because I do wonder about some of those traits where they're just kind of left there. Like, I liked how... Was it Soldier with Cable that kind of gave it a bit more purpose with his cards? I think Mission Mission Leader, I think, was one of them. Oh, Shapeshifter, that's cool.
Mm. Well, let's talk about what Mystique is trying to do. All right. The side scheme that comes with this module is called Mystique's Manipulations. While she knows Mystique can't be trusted, Rogue still finds it hard to reject the woman who raised her. Indeed. All right. When defeated, search the encounter deck and discard pile for a copy of the Misled Treachery and shuffle it into your deck. It comes with a acceleration icon and has two threat per player and two boost icons.
You're pretty cool. I like the fine line that it walks there with it tantalizingly just two threat. So easily taken off. But once you do it, you're going to have to get your Misled.
Do you all agree that the acceleration icon is the most ignorable one?
Not in a solo game.
Not solo. Okay, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, because if, you know, you have a six threat threshold, this means you're putting two on it. That only leaves four left, which means you can't I mean, it's very difficult to flip the.
You have to deal with threat every turn for somehow. Yeah.
For somehow, yeah. But it's interesting that.
Sorry.
I was gonna say, if you leave this out, you're putting threat on the main scheme. Or if you clear this, you're gonna get a card that puts threat on the main scheme.
Yeah. I mean, just thinking, would it work better with the hazard icon, like because you're drawing
or crisis, cards. But yeah,
or crosses, yeah. Because yeah, personally, I hate the hazard one. You don't want to draw more bad cards than you need to. So
right,
yeah, hazard would be really tough. The crisis, I think, takes away from the choice of
yeah,
which one of these is worse for me, the acceleration or the misled.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah,
it's fun.
Yeah, it's good,
and that's not comic art. So
oh, okay.
There's only one comic art here, and that is Mystique herself.
Oh, yes, right.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the artwork's pretty good, regardless. Yeah. I mean, I don't want to, take anything away from non-comic book art, so, yeah.
I mean, you know who those two characters are, right? You can tell.
Yep.
Yeah.
So.
Yes.
And it's the same,
Yeah,
it's the same rogue from The Misled. She's got the same sweater on, so.
Oh, yeah. Didn't Look at change.
That. Same artist, so, yeah.
So is this scene in the side scheme right after that moment or before it?
Oh.
Hmm.
Can paint our own
so many there. Stories you could tell.
And is the guy laying on the ground and misled actually Mystique?
Oh, I like it. Misled, yes, all right. Misled,
yeah. Rogue's been misled. So
what we need when folks write in for this one, Steve, is we need some fan fiction.
What's happening in these fan?
What is the story happening between the misled and the Mystique's manipulations arts?
Nice.
150 word stories. Flash fiction, guys. Flash fiction.
Okay. You heard Daniel. So what do we give the grading? Ray, we usually give it a school report card grading, A through F, A being really good for the villain. Remember where you're at. What do you think?
Yeah. there are other, Nemesis sets that pack a big wallop. But this one's pretty, pretty sinister enough. I'd give it maybe a B, just because, in solo, which I play most of the time, that threat from the misled treacheries shouldn't hurt too much. But as you've mentioned, it comes with a whole lot of other things around it, like surge and less of a hand size and stuff like that. And I like how the things synergize together, the sides game. The minion, the nemesis, and the treachery cards, they all work really well together. So it's not going to be, up there with the likes of Dark Phoenix, I guess, or Enchantress. Yeah. But it's enough there to really kind of, as Daniel said, make you rethink your strategy, which is good. Anything that can like bump you off the road that you're on while you're playing is a good challenge. So, yeah.
Mm, good.
Daniel?
Yeah, I'm going to give it a B as well. I like, for me, this modular would get an A for theme and a C because, Steve, I don't like just using the same card over and over.
Yeah, in this case, you kind of need to.
In this case, I get it, and it makes a lot of sense. I totally understand it, but, I don't know.
It's okay.
But, I played Rogue in a campaign, never saw Mystique. So
good.
I don't really have lived experience of what this nemesis does when she comes into play. So, but yeah, I think it's solid B. Like, she's not really destroying the world for everyone at the table. Caesar.
Yeah, I think you're both right in the right area. It's kind of some subtle challenges, which maybe is accurate for theme. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
I wonder if for theme, some Nemesis sets are so clearly all about the hero.
Mm-hmm.
Where, like, it really is there to just
it's like a hard counter for the hero.
Hard counter specifically for that hero. I wonder, because based on Ray's story, that this should have been one of those. It's not really. It's more of a global effect kind of thing. But
yeah,
I wonder
true.
If this could have like really messed with the rogue player. Subtly, like,
yeah, maybe instead of place two threat, be something more directly towards the hero, right? Yeah,
but I don't know. I guess too, like, you don't really as a designer want to go there too much, but that's what the nemesis opportunity gives you, I think.
Yeah,
it's like, yeah. This is your personal problem. But yeah.
Yeah. Seems fair. All right. Well, Ray, thanks for coming on. Thanks for chatting with us. Thanks for talking movies. Thanks for talking lore. One more time, where can the people find you the easiest if they want to reach out?
Now, first of all, as well, thank you for inviting me on the show. Absolutely loved it. Love chatting with you guys. Love listening to your podcast as well. The easiest way to contact me is through my handle at RayRayPod, R-E-Y-R-E-Y pod. You should be able to find me on X, on Blue Sky, on Facebook. There are kind of links to my other shows and stuff. So yeah, drop us a line. I can talk your ear off about comics and now Marvel Champions because I'm just so addicted.
And they folks should go out and check out your YouTube channel and watch you play.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And Ray, as soon as we get Moon Knight or another Spider Woman.
Scarlet Spider.
Scarlet Spider, sure.
Yes. Or
hey, if we end up with the Predator.
That can happen.
we'll have you back for sure.
So that'd be awesome. Thank you.
All right. Yeah. All right. So if you have some Flash fan fiction on what's happening in these panels that Daniel wants, let's keep it PG, people. You can email us at criticalencounterspod@gmail.com. We are Critical Encounters on Facebook. You can find our YouTube, our Twitch, or our Patreon by searching for Critical Encounters Podcast. And at Discord, we are Vardane, Big Foam Love, Wandering Tooth, and Ray Ray Pod. If you like our show, tell your friends. If you don't like our show, tell your enemies. Mystique, take us out.
Don't you see? This is who you were meant to be. This is you. No more hiding.
Daniel, you got rid of you know what it was? A baby monitor by his microphone.
Yeah, I've got the baby monitor here. Yeah, I've muted it now. So, but I've got like a little light indicator. So I know if she's crying, I can see it. So
I was going to say, like, yeah, that's.
Yeah.
That's pretty funny.
Dedication to mute your baby.